This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Right now we're going to talk about an internal report released yesterday from the Justice Department. It criticizes the way federal authorities treated hundreds of foreign nationals who were detained after September the 11th. Among the charges, prisoners had little access to family and legal assistance. Prisoners were exposed to unduly harsh conditions, including physical and verbal abuse, and the FBI did not do enough to distinguish between those immigrants with possible links to terrorists and those who were clearly unlikely to have any such connection. We'll talk about more about what's in the report, as well as the questions that it raises. Should we have the same standards to treat all prisoners, or should there be different rules for those suspected of links to terrorism? If you have questions about that or what's in the report, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is NPR's Larry Abramson. Good to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Thanks.
Tell us a little bit more about the abuses detailed in this report.
Well, a key problem in the detention of these immigrants, and this is for 762 immigrants who were detained, almost all of them right after 9/11, was that a decision was made to hold them all without bond. Ordinarily, immigrants who are put into the process of possibly being considered to be expelled from this country can get bond. They can wander around freely. All 762 of these people were not allowed to get any bond. So they were immediately cut off from their community, from their families, and many of them found it very difficult to get in touch with anybody outside these prisons. And that was the second problem. The Justice Department made a decision to cut off communication between these immigrants and their families, and in many cases, and their attorneys. They made it very difficult for them to get any legal advice. So they couldn't find out what they'd done wrong. And in many cases, they hadn't done anything wrong. They couldn't get any advice on how to get out. They couldn't find out, you know, what was, you can imagine being detained on September 11th and then suddenly you're in this twilight zone. You don't know what's going on outside the country. When you went in, there were these terrible attacks going on. Some of these people were also supposed to be deported because in nearly every case, they were found to have violated immigration laws by overstaying their visas. Then the Department of Justice decided to hold on to them really as long as possible because they didn't want to let anybody go who might be connected with terrorism. And then there were other more particular violations. Some of them were held in very harsh conditions in cells where the lights were left on day and night, where they were kept inside the cells for 23 hours a day, so sort of supermax conditions for these people, many of whom had never even had a parking ticket.
Never been charged with anything either.
Right.
Is it unusual for the Department of Justice to issue a report critical of activities conducted under the auspices of the Department of Justice?
Right. Well, this report came from the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, and it is not unusual for this Inspector General, Glenn Fine, to issue reports that are critical. It is unusual for the Department of Justice to acknowledge that it made a mistake in the war on terror. And this is probably one of the few times the department has done that, and it's only done it in this situation where the IG, the Inspector General, comes in and says, you all made some mistakes. But it's important to point out that the Department of Justice itself, the officials who were responsible for these policies, did not come out and say, you're right, we're sorry. In fact, they defended everything that they did. They, of course, respected their colleagues, the Inspector General's right to criticize some of the actions or raise some questions, and said that they would take all of this under advisement, as it were. But this is not a vow by the department to change everything at all.
Well, how do those criticized in the report explain what they did?
The report does not really single out individuals, although I have to say, if you have the time to read all 200 pages, you'll notice the name of Attorney General Ashcroft pretty prominently in there. It's clear that the policies that were devised were set at the highest levels, if not the Attorney General, than some of his immediate deputies. And it's also clear from the report that when lower-level officials in the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which at that time was part of the Department of Justice, is no longer, when they raise some questions and says, we can't hold these people beyond 90 days, we have to deport them or we have to let them back out into the community, FBI and Department of Justice officials attempted to try to keep them in jail as long as possible. So there were discussions going on within the department about letting them go, but a decision was pretty much made that the best thing was, the safest thing was, to keep them where they were as long as they could possibly do that.
And that gets to, I guess, the fundamental explanation for these abuses is that, people were concerned for the public safety. They were looking out and making sure that they weren't releasing terrorists on the street.
That's right. And this is very important. I think in some ways, if you worked at the Department of Justice, you would be reassured to hear top officials saying this report shows that what we did, while aggressive, was not illegal. And in fact, the Inspector General did not come up with any illegalities. He didn't say the process was unconstitutional. That's what many civil liberties groups have, in fact, been alleging for years now, since September 11th. The Department of Justice said, we were defending your lives, basically, by trying to be as sure as we could. If we kept people longer than absolutely necessary, they didn't say they're sorry. Mm-hmm. We had to do it, basically. And you get a pretty clear indication, although they didn't say this, that if they were in this situation again, if there were another attack or some kind of emergency, there's no reason why they wouldn't pursue this policy in pretty much the same way.
So where do we go now with the debate over how immigrants should be treated when the concern is terrorism? Or will the legal community and the public accept different standards for different kinds of detainees?
Well, you know, this report, I think, leaves people on the horns of the same dilemma that many other issues in the civil liberties debate have left us. And that is what you said. Do you have the same standards, or do you say, oops, sorry, terrorism, everything's different in this country, we can't observe the same rules? And what civil liberties groups have been most upset about, I think, is that they feel what happened was immigrants, the defenseless, most defenseless among us, were singled out. It was assumed that they would not be able to raise any constitutional protests against their treatment. And so we took it out on them, sort of. The country did things to them that they wouldn't tolerate for regular citizens. And, I think a lot of people in the criminal justice system say, well, of course we did that. These are the people, the kinds of people who launched the attacks. And I don't know if that debate is really ever going to be resolved. What's also important here is if you look at aviation security, other areas, criminal justice people have been trying to find ways to narrow down the haystack that they have to search through for those needles, for those mm-hmm. terrorists. This is one way of doing that, saying, okay, we're just going to look at immigrants, or we're just going to look at people who set off whatever alarms we put in airports. And many people feel like that is a slippery slope. It's a bad way to get going. You really need to go on the basis of suspicion, that you have to have grounds for doing this, that you have to have a real predicate, a criminal predicate for detaining somebody. But it's tough to do that and preempt terrorism as opposed to catching people after the fact.
One other thing that was a puzzle throughout this period was how many of these people there were, and what, if anything, they were going to be charged with. So how many were there, and what was their disposition?
Well, it was 762 people who were put in the status of being immigrants who were detained and of special interest to the FBI. But you raise a very good point. For a very long time, the Justice Department wouldn't tell us that it was reminiscent of the McCarthy numbers that nobody could ever latch onto. And I think many lawyers felt that the secrecy that attended these proceedings, the fact that many of these immigrants had secret detention hearings, their names were not known, we had no idea how many of them there were, made it impossible for anybody to reach in from the outside and represent them. And so they were hopelessly lost. And, who's to say how long that could have gone on if the Department of Justice had simply said, we're not going to tell you, it would disrupt the terror investigation, it's a secret.
And so what has happened to these people?
Well, they've all been released as far as we know. The Justice Department, again, very reluctant to give any definite information about this, said recently that one person was still in detention, and I wasn't able to find out whether that one person had been released. But many of them sat in jail as long as 9 months and then were released because they had done nothing.
Larry Abramson, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Larry Abramson covers criminal justice issues for National Public Radio.